Madame Wardia and friends. I cannot begin my talk this evening without saying how glad I am to be back in Bombay. Indians like to hear this sort of thing. And in any case, I was quite glad to be back. I had almost said glad to be back even in Bombay, with its problems of pollution and overpopulation. Bombay, one has to admit, is in some respects not the most attractive of cities, but it has its compensations. And for me, the place has a special appeal. My associations with the city go back to 1944, when I had my first glimpse of the Bombay docks from the deck of a British troop ship. Thereafter, I often had occasion to visit Bombay, and with every visit became better acquainted with the place. Though living in the foothills of the eastern Himalayas, amidst beautiful and inspiring scenery, I came to look forward to my annual winter visit to Bombay, even though I was a little saddened each time to see how the once lovely city had deteriorated. The people, however, never deteriorated. Each time I came down, I received a warmer welcome than ever from my friends. Not the least of my associations in Bombay was with Theosophy Hall, where I spoke on a number of occasions. In fact, I think I have hardly ever visited Bombay, even for a short period, without speaking here at least once or twice. Last time I spoke here was, I believe, in the winter of 1966, when I addressed you on the subject of Tibetan Buddhist meditation. Tonight I am speaking to you again, and this time my subject is going for refuge. In Pali, sarana gamana, in Sanskrit, sharanagamana. I am happy to have been invited to speak on this topic, since it is one which for many years has been very close to my heart. However, I am going to approach it indirectly via my experience of living and working for Buddhism in England. As some of you know, for 12 or 13 years, my face was not seen in Bombay, or indeed in India. During that period, I was busy with the creation and consolidation of an entirely new Buddhist movement in the West, beginning with England. And it is via my experience of that new Buddhist movement that I am going to approach the subject of going for refuge tonight. At the various urban centres of this new Buddhist movement, known in England as the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, and in India as the Trailokya Bodhimaha Sangha Sahayak Gana, we conduct a wide range of activities. These include lectures on Buddhism, as well as on literature and the fine arts, meditation classes, hatha yoga classes, and courses in human communication. From time to time, day retreats are held. The latter involve spending the whole day at the centre engaged in meditation, study, discussion, and human communication. People come to hear about our activities in various ways. Some hear about them through our publicity, but more often they hear about them simply by word of mouth. One friend tells another that there is a place where you can meditate, or where you can learn about Buddhism, or practice Hatha Yoga. By one means or another, people make contact with the local FWO centre, and thus with our new Buddhist movement. At first, they may be interested simply in meditation, or Buddhist philosophy, or Hatha Yoga, and come to us just for that. Anyway, they start coming. Probably you know that nowadays in England, as in most Western countries, there are thousands of people who are engaged in sampling all kinds of spiritual groups. They go along to one group for a while, then to another, and so on. In this way, they sample quite a number of groups. Some of the people who come to us are of this type. They come to us for a time, then leave to continue their search elsewhere. Some of them, however, remain with us. Because they like our approach and feel at home with us, they stay and get more deeply involved in our activities. One day it dawns on them that they would like to identify themselves with us and, in a word, belong. When they reach that point, they can become what we call a mitra, which is simply the Sanskrit word for friend. Here I should perhaps explain that our new Buddhist movement, the FWBO or TBMSG, we have no membership in the ordinary sense. You cannot join simply by filling in a form and paying a subscription. In place of this system, we have a different system, and it is this, in fact, which I am in the process of describing. When you reach the point of wanting to belong to the FWBO and become a mitra, you make your wishes known, and if your desire is genuine and you have a real interest in the work of the FWBO, a simple public ceremony is held at which you offer flowers, a lighted candle, and a stick of incense before an image of the Buddha. In this way, you become a mitra. Until then, you have been a friend with a capital F. We have these categories, so to speak, of non-member membership. Anybody who comes along and participates in any of our activities, to however small an extent, is regarded as a friend. You don't have to join in any formal sense. You are free to derive whatever benefit you can from the activities without incurring any obligation or responsibility. We are quite happy for you to do this. If you want to become more deeply involved, however, then you become a mitra in the manner I have described. The fact that you have become a mitra means that your search for a spiritual group to which you can belong has now ended, and that henceforth your time, energy, and interest will be devoted exclusively to the FWBO. Four things are expected of a mitra. A mitra is expected, 1, to attend the local FWBO centre regularly and participate in its activities. 2, to keep up a daily meditation practice. 3, to maintain contact with the order members or Dasa Sila Upasakas who conduct all the centre activities, and do your best to develop Kalyana Mitrata or spiritual fellowship with them. And 4, to help the centre and the movement generally in any practical way he can. Thus, we have friends, mitras, and what we call order members or Dasa Sila Upasakas, about whom I shall be saying something in a minute. As a mitra, you will probably find yourself becoming increasingly involved with the movement and increasingly attracted to the beauty of the Buddhist spiritual ideal, the ideal of human enlightenment. You may find that your experience of meditation is becoming deeper, that your communication with other people is expanding, and that psychological conditionings are being removed. Eventually, you may find that the center of gravity of your whole existence has been subtly shifted, and that you now want to give up your old interests and activities and commit yourself wholly to Buddhism, to the Dharma, to the spiritual life. When that point is reached, you start thinking in terms of joining the order or, to put it more traditionally, in terms of going for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. If the existing order members are convinced that your aspiration is genuine and that you really are able to go for refuge, by no means an easy thing to do, then your application, inverted commas, is accepted, and in due course, the very beautiful ordination ceremony is held. You become a Dasa, Sila, Upasaka, one who goes for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and who, in addition, takes upon himself, or herself, the 10 Silas, or moral precepts, by means of which body, speech, and mind are progressively and systematically purified. By this time, you may be wondering where this going for refuge has its origin, and why it seems to represent the culmination of one's involvement not only with our new Buddhist movement, but even with Buddhism itself. After all, one first becomes a friend, then a Mitra, and finally a Dasa, Sila, Upasaka, as I have just explained. The tradition of going for refuge is, however, a very ancient one. In order to understand where it had its origin and why it is of such tremendous importance, we shall therefore have to go back a very long way, back in fact to the Buddha's own lifetime and through certain incidents in his career.